headlines, Iran says any agreement in the Vienna talks on the revival of the 2015 deal must include guarantees that no new sanctions will be imposed on Tehran once they are removed. 1 year after the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol, Americans are concerned about the survival of democracy in their country. Plus, Sudanese security forces shoot dead three protesters during the latest mass demonstrations demanding a transition to civilian rule after the October coup. Thank you for joining us. The top story this hour, Tehran says it wants guarantees that new sanctions won't be imposed on Iran as the country continues talks with the remaining parties to the 2015 deal. The Iranian foreign minister says his country demands removal of all sanctions imposed after the U.S. withdrew from the agreement known as the JCPOA. In an interview with Al Jazeera, Hossein Amir Abdullahian declared Iran wants assurances that it will be able to export oil and access its revenues. They said the ongoing negotiations in Vienna between Iran and the P4+1 are moving forward in the right direction. They said a good agreement can be reached in the talks if the Western negotiators show determination. The United States unilaterally pulled out of the JCPOA in 2018 and reinstated its sanctions against Tehran. The eighth round of negotiations between Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 deal continues in the Austrian capital. Iran's top negotiator in the Vienna talks has met with South Korea's deputy foreign minister on the sidelines of the talks. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Vienna, Homa Lizgi, for the latest developments.
The talks are ongoing. Yesterday, we had news from the Russian ambassador, Mikhail Oryanov, that there's been another meeting between the 4+1, the remaining signatories of the JCPOA minus Iran, with the U.S. delegation led by Rob Malley, as they take stock of the latest developments and the progress that's been made in this round. Also last night, Mr. Barghari Khani, the head of Iran's delegation, when he was here entering the Palais Cobol behind me to go into more meetings, he was asked by reporters if the talks were moving ahead. He said that they are positive and things are moving along. But today there was a meeting between Mr. Barghari and his South Korean counterpart. Of course, this is not directly related to the Vienna talks, but we are hearing that during this meeting with his South Korean counterpart, there were some discussion of the frozen funds, Iran's frozen funds in South Korean banks, amounting to somewhere between $7 to $8 billion. And Mr. Barghari in this meeting said that regardless of the result of the Vienna talks, the South Korean government is duty-bound, in his words, to release these frozen funds, and the U.S. secondary sanctions should not be used as an excuse for South Korea not to release these funds. And he called South Korea's refusal up to this stage to do this as illegal and unjustifiable. The fact that the South Korean delegate is here is seen as a good sign, of course, but we'll have to see if the Vienna talks are going to conclude successfully. Russian Ambassador Mr. Oryanov has said he believes it is possible to reach an agreement or a conclusion of the talks by early February. Iran saying that if the Americans are serious about completely lifting all of the sanctions, including the Trump-era sanctions, in a verifiable manner, and also giving Iran guarantees, then Iran also believes that an agreement or a restoration of the JCPOA will indeed be possible soon. But we'll have to see if that's going to happen.
A senior commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says Americans will have to leave Iraq in a more humiliating manner than the way they left Afghanistan. The commander of the IRGC's Quds Force said the Americans are facing various problems in the region, while the resistance front is advancing on a daily basis. Brigadier General Ismail Ghani noted that resistance fighters are now equipped with missiles and weapons that can target U.S. warships anywhere in the region. The senior commander said Americans will finally be uprooted from the region. He made the remarks at a ceremony in the Iranian city of Mashhad on the second anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iran's top general, Qasem Soleimani, and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in Baghdad. Bonney condemned as the most cowardly the manner in which the U.S. assassinated the two anti-terror icons. Political commentator Kevin Barrett joined us earlier with a breakdown of the reasons why the U.S. military presence in West Asia is waning.
And this process is moving along faster than anyone realized for a number of reasons. One is the incredible strategic mistake that the Americans and their Israeli puppet masters made in assassinating General Soleimani and Colonel Mohandas, that assassination actually ended up creating martyrs and galvanizing the resistance in the region around the goal of expelling the U.S. from this region. Now, the U.S. never should have been in the region in the first place, especially in the heavy-handed way it came in after the false flag event of September 11, 2001. The U.S. strategic struggle is for Eurasia. China is the biggest competitor of the U.S., and Russia could be something of a competitor as well. But the West Asia should not be. West Asia should be at peace with the U.S. It isn't, because the Zionists tricked America into going to war on spurious grounds after the false flag of 9/11 2001. That process now has unraveled. It's over. And Saigon and Kabul are now going down in history together, and something similar will happen with the Green Zone in Baghdad, inshallah.
The Syrian president says assassinated Iranian commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani sought to foil Washington's divisive plots in the region. Bashar Assad noted that the anti-terror icon posed a threat to the interests of the United States and its allies in the region. The remarks came in a statement read out during a ceremony in the Syrian capital, Damascus. The event was held on the second anniversary of the assassination of General Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas. Assad hailed the two commanders as the main pillars of resistance against enemies of the region. Thousands of Iranians have taken part in a funeral procession held for dozens of soldiers of the 1980s Iraqi-imposed war on Iran, whose remains have been found 3 decades after the end of the Iraqi war. The event is also aimed at commemorating Iranian military figure Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in a U.S. drone attack in 2020. Yusuf Jalali reports.
These caskets, draped in Iranian flag, contains the bodies of 150 Iranian soldiers whose remains have recently been found, more than 3 decades after the end of the Iraqi-imposed war on Iran. The mourning procession in Tehran is part of a larger national event, which saw similar memorial services held for 100 more martyrs in 24 provinces across the country. The funerals were attended by Iranian military and state officials, as well as thousands of Iranians, to pay tribute to the martyrs, and also to observe the second anniversary of the U.S.'s assassination of top Iranian military figure, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani.
We have returned, and now the people are greeting those martyrs who have sacrificed their lives. General Soleimani also was a personality who has sacrificed his life in order to maintain the security of our country. Now this is a coincidence with the second anniversary of martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, and now they have returned. As you can see, everyone is holding the picture of General Qasem Soleimani, and this shows a reminder of the job that General Soleimani has done for our country.
General Soleimani fought for the security of our country and the region. He pushed back the terrorists, and this made him as a popular figure in the region.
Lieutenant General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. He was assassinated in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump. Soleimani is highly revered in the region for his anti-terror efforts and his role in eradicating Daesh terrorists from Iraq in 2017.
General Soleimani spent all his life fighting for our security, once in the Iraq-Iran war and then in the fight against terrorism. The U.S. assassinated him because he did not allow the terrorists to take over the region. The U.S. was with the terrorists.
We are all Qasem Soleimani. The United States thought in vain that if it killed our general, it would disrupt his endeavors, but we all will keep his legacy alive.
General Soleimani began his career as a soldier in the IRGC in the Iraq-Iran war. While above 200,000 Iranians are estimated to have either lost their lives or gone missing during the war, Over the years, the country has been carrying out search operations to recover the remains of those missing.
The Islamic Republic always holds such mass ceremonies to honor its martyrs, and General Soleimani is no exception, as the country also regards him as a martyr and a national hero. Now, on the second anniversary of Soleimani's assassination, Iranians have been using any chance to pay homage to him. These people say this is to preserve what Soleimani stood for. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
U.S. President Joe Biden accuses his predecessor, Donald Trump, of spreading lies to overturn his 2020 election defeat.
And here's the truth. The former president of the United States of America has created and spread a web of lies about the 2020 election. He's done so because he values power over principle, because he sees his own interest as more important than his country's interest, than America's interest.
Biden made the remarks as he marked the first anniversary of the deadly attack by Trump's supporters on the Congress building. Speaking at the scene of the January 6 riots, Biden accused Trump of posing a continuing threat to American democracy. He noted that Trump was the first president in U.S. history who tried to prevent the peaceful transfer of power. Donald Trump immediately issued a statement in response, accusing Biden of trying to further divide America. 1 year has passed since the supporters of former U.S. President Donald Trump stormed the Capitol Hill while lawmakers were certifying the victory of Joe Biden. Americans have been sharing their thoughts on the incident and its repercussions for the future of democracy and voting rights in their country. Let's have a look.
I think that voting rights and making sure that voting rights are ensured for everyone in the United States is the single most important issue that we have in the immediate term. And if that is not acted upon, I'm very concerned about the future of our democracy. And I don't think secession is something that's going to happen, but I do believe there will be increasing violence unless we ensure the integrity of our votes. And I don't mean that in the sense that I believe there was a steal. I believe just the opposite. I think the attacks that have been made on secretaries of state around the country are disgusting, and we need to stop that immediately.
Yes, I think absolutely, because we have state legislatures that have authorized themselves to overturn people's votes and overturn what happens in individual states. And I don't know if we can count on the Supreme Court to protect our rights as voters, not in the district so much, but in other parts of the country.
Yeah, I think it was disproportionately represented. I mean, there were a lot of people protesting, but most of them are fairly peaceful. And then with that amount of crowd, you can't really control everybody.
To be honest, I feel like it's been more out of sight, out of mind. I think with how the media moves really fast, and you kind of forget about what happened. I wouldn't say that I feel more confident that that couldn't happen again in the future. I would just say that it's kind of in the back of my mind now, and maybe I think a little bit more about where I'm going and where I'll be at, and try to get a little bit better pulse on what's going on in places that I travel to.
Earlier, we spoke to activist and commentator Gloria Labriva. She is critical of U.S. Democrats for not doing enough to hold Donald Trump accountable for the Capitol riot. Have a listen.
Well, I think more it's the division that has been fostered in the ruling circles of the United States. And I think what we need to do is really analyze what has happened in this last year since January 6th. Those scenes are horrifying, by the way, to see the violence and the fascist nature of those who assaulted the Capitol. The fact that Donald Trump was the head of it, who instigated it, who called on them, who encouraged them. And then in the days later, he had to withdraw a little bit from it. But since that year, he has come to the forefront, in which today he began to salute again those who took part. And the danger is that the Democrats are not fighting to prosecute him. And all this year, it's been a very soft-handed approach to Trump. And that's the danger, is that Trump's being allowed to continue even without tweet or Facebook. He's still allowed to gather up all the ultra-right and extreme-right, all the Republicans, really, in this attempt to take back power. And so that's the problem, is what's happening at the top.
In Sudan, thousands of anti-military protesters have thronged the streets of the capital Khartoum and other cities to demand a return of civilian rule. Security forces reportedly fired tear gas in Khartoum while three demonstrators were shot dead elsewhere. That brings to 60 the number of people killed in the crackdown on protests against the October military coup. Thursday's protests come a few days after Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok resigned, throwing Sudan's future deeper into uncertainty. Hamdok became Prime Minister in 2019 under a power-sharing agreement between a coalition of military and civilian leaders after longtime ruler Omar al-Bashir was toppled. Hamdok was deposed by the military in the October coup. He was reinstated weeks later in a failed bid to salvage the power-sharing arrangement. In Kazakhstan, security forces resort to use of force on the fifth day of a deadly unrest triggered by soaring fuel prices. Security forces have cleared the main square in Almaty, where police opened fire on protesters earlier in the day. Officials say dozens of people were killed in clashes with police as they attempted to storm government buildings. Nearly 2,300 people have also been arrested. Reports say a total of 18 police officers have been killed and around 750 others injured in the violence. Meanwhile, the first batch of peacekeepers, from a regional security alliance led by Russia has arrived in Kazakhstan at the request of the Kazakh government.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The nonprofit environmental working group, EWG, estimates that drinking water for more than 170 million Americans in all 50 states contains radioactive elements at levels that may increase the risk of cancer. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Lynn Peoples, journalist. This article is published under the heading Radioactive contamination is creeping into drinking water around the U.S. Stay tuned for more. When Jenny Knack moved to Simi Valley, California in 2018, she had no idea that her family's new home was within 5 miles of a former nuclear and rocket testing lab, perched atop a plateau and rife with contamination. Radioactive cesium-137, strontium-90, plutonium-239 and tritium, along with a mix of other toxic chemicals and heavy metals, are known to have been released at the industrial site through various spills, leaks, and the use of open-air burn pits. and a partial nuclear meltdown. Once NAC learned about the Santa Susana Field Lab and the unusual number of childhood cancer cases in the surrounding community, she couldn't ignore it. Her family now only drinks water from a 5-gallon, 19-liter jug delivered by Sparklets Water Service. In August, she began sending her 6-year-old daughter to kindergarten with 2 bottles of the water and instructions to not refill them at school, which is connected to the same Golden State Water Company that serves her home. A federal report in 2007 acknowledged that 2 wells sourced by the water company were at risk of contamination from the site. The EPA has said, "We are at risk," says NAC. And Golden State, she says, has at times used possibly a very hefty portion of that well water. To date, radioactivity above the natural level has not been detected in Golden State water. All water contains some level of radiation. The amount and type can vary significantly. Production of nuclear weapons and energy from material is one potential source. Mining for uranium is another. Radioactive elements can be introduced into water via medical treatments, including radioactive iodine used to treat thyroid disorders. And it can be unearthed during oil and gas drilling, or any industrial activities that involve cracking into bedrock, where radioactive elements naturally exist. What's more, because of their natural presence, these elements can occasionally seep into aquifers even without being provoked. The nonprofit environmental working group, EWG, estimates that drinking water for more than 170 million Americans in all 50 states contains radioactive elements at levels that may increase the risk of cancer. In their analysis of public water system data collected between 2010 and 2015, EWG focused on 6 radioactive contaminants, including radium, radon, and uranium. They found that California has more residents affected by radiation in their drinking water than anywhere else in the U.S., yet the state is far from alone. About 80% of Texans are served by water utilities reporting detectable levels of radium. And concerns have echoed across the U.S., from abandoned uranium mines on Navajo Nation lands to lingering nuclear waste from the Manhattan Project in Missouri to contaminants leaching from phosphate mines in Florida. While ingesting radioactive elements through drinking contaminated water is not the only route of human exposure, it is a major risk pathway, says Daniel Hirsch, a retired University of California Santa Cruz professor who has studied the Santa Susana Field Lab contamination. One thing you don't want to do is to mix radioactivity with water. It's an easy mechanism to get it inside people, he says. When you drink water, you think you exert it. But body is made to extract things from what you ingest, he said. Strontium-90, for example, is among elements that mimic calcium, so the body is apt to concentrate the contaminant in bones, raising the risk of leukemia. Pregnant women and young kids are especially vulnerable because greater amounts of radiation are deposited in rapidly growing tissue and bones. This is why pregnant women are never x-rayed, says Catherine Thomason, an independent environmental policy consultant based in Portland, Oregon. CCM can deposit in pancreas, heart, and other tissues, she notes. there, it may continue to emit radioactivity over time, causing disease and damage. Scientists believe that no amount of radiation is safe. At high levels, the radiation produced by radioactive elements can trigger birth defects, impair development, and cause cancer in almost any part of the body. An early life exposure means a long period of time for damage to develop. Health advocates express concern that the U.S. government is not doing enough to protect the public from these and other risks associated with exposure to radioactive contamination in drinking water. The legal limits set by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, for several types of radioactive elements in community water systems have not been updated since 1976. Further, many elements are regulated as a group rather than individually, such as radium-226 plus radium-228. And water system operates, if they are required to monitor for radioactive elements, only need to do so infrequently, say every 6 or 9 years for certain contaminants. Meanwhile, private wells generally remain unregulated with regard to the elements, which is particularly concerning because some nuclear power plants are located in rural areas where people depend on private wells. More than one out of every 10 Americans use private wells or tiny water systems that serve fewer than 15 residences. The Santa Susana Field Lab was rural when it was first put to use about 70 years ago. Today, more than 700,000 people live within 10 miles, that is 16 kilometers. Recent wildfires have exacerbated these residents' concerns. The 2018 Woosley Fire started on the property and burned 80% of its 2,850 acres. Over the following 3 months, the levels of chemical and radioactive contamination running off the site exceeded the state safety standards 57 times. Hirsch highlighted several potential avenues for drinking water contamination related to nuclear weapons or energy development. Wind can send contamination off-site and deposit it into the soil. For example, gravity can carry contaminants downhill, and rains can carry contamination via streams and rivers to infiltrate groundwater aquifers. While vegetation absorbs radioactive and chemical contaminants from the soil in which it grows, those pollutants are readily released into the environment during a fire. Food for thought. Salam and condolences to you on a day of profound grief. Since today, the 3rd of Jamadil Thani, is the tragic martyrdom anniversary of the noblest lady of all times, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her. We present you a memorable hadith from her father, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. He who knows this knows her, and he who does not know her, known that she is a part of me, she is my heart and my spirit, which is in my side. Thus, he who harms her harms me.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wasalam, is actually known as Bab al-Hawaij.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام خير الأمور أوسطها.
زيارة of Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim alayhi salam.
السلام عليك يا مولاي موسى ابن جعفر ورحمة الله.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome, dear listeners. I'm your host, Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam. Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. And thus we can comfortably say that the blood in Imam Musa al-Kadhim's veins was the blood of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. And Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam was also the seventh divinely appointed Imam from the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. We find, dear friends, that the narrators have unanimously agreed that Imam Musa al-Kadhim, peace be upon him, had immense abilities when it came to knowledge. It was said that he was the most knowledgeable of all the Muslims of his time. The religious scholars and the reporters of traditions surrounded Imam Musa al-Kadhim. They hurried to write down his religious edicts or his religious narrations, his traditions, his knowledge and his words of wisdom concerning all kind of events and things that were happening in the environment. These religious scholars and reporters reported on the authority of Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam regarding all kinds of knowledge and art and sciences, but most especially concerning the Islamic legislative system, the Sharia. For Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam provided these religious scholars and these reporters of traditions with his own generous abilities when it came to the religious edicts of Islam. And so in this respect, Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam is regarded as one of the first of the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt to split open the chapters of the lawful and the forbidden. These, dear friends, are the dialogues of Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام: لا تبذل لإخوانك من نفسك ما ضره عليك أكثر من منفعته لهم.
Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam stated, do not give away of yourself to your brothers so much that the loss incurred by you supersedes the benefit to them.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's a blessing to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, we find in the beautiful conversations of Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam that he urged the Muslims to obtain an understanding in the religion of Allah. Imam al-Kazim also urged the Muslims to have knowledge of religious precepts. Now, Imam al-Kazim has said some interesting things along these lines. In a conversation with one of his companions, we find that Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam said to him, obtain an understanding in the religion of Allah, for obtaining understanding in the religion is a means for high positions and great rank in both the religion and the world. In this beautiful conversation, we find, dear friends, that obtaining an understanding of the religion of Allah is truly a means for attaining a high position, a great rank in the eyes of Allah, in the eyes of the Holy Prophet. Now, even if this in itself wasn't a great thing to acquire because of the obtainment of understanding in the religion of Allah, Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam tells us that if you obtain understanding in the religion of Allah, and if you obtain an understanding in the religious precepts and you have a knowledge about them, you will even obtain a high position and a great rank in this very world. So, by the obtainment of understanding, of knowledge in the religion of Allah, in Islam, we will attain a high position both in the religion, in the world, and in the hereafter. Again, the importance of obtaining religious knowledge and obtaining understanding of the religion of Allah, a commandment in this dialogue, Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program Dialogue. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I want you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Abbas Mirza about Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
Harun Rashid was trying to check, where is the Imam? You know, he's in this zindan, in this prison of dark well, down underneath. He couldn't really trace the Imam. The guard said, you know, gaze, look very carefully. Do you see that? He says, yes, it's just a cloth. He says, no, that's not the cloth. But that is the Imam doing sajda. And he has gone so fragile. He has gone so thin that Harun Rashid thought is just a cloth. The amount of zulm that Imam have gone through in these prisons are really undescribable. One cannot really describe. As we see that Imam have trained great scholars, Hisham ibn Hakam, a great theologian, you know, who was very young and who was, you know, taken as under the wing of the Imam and was trained by the Imam. Then you have Yahya ibn Akhtin, another scholar, you know, who was trained. Yahya was also trained. And many of them were planted within the ministry with the execution of taqiyya. Imam have asked them to do taqiyya and to be in the ministry and support the followers of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, because the intensity upon the Sadat, upon the Sayyids, upon the followers were so strong, right, was so powerful that they were persecuted, that there was embargo, you know. And as you know that the Sahm Sadat that is seen in fiqh from Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam points out to that embargo, that sanction against the Sayyids that were taking place. They were not given jobs, they were not given permission to buy lands and plots, and they were secluded and persecuted. Then at least through this means that they will be, you know, aided. You have the element of the Sahm-e Sadat being introduced during that period of the Sikh Iman, that we find immense amount of riwayat and traditions.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news, with delight.
Shanghai is one of the most famous cities in the world, boasting an impressive number of tourist attractions. Now, the city is hosting, that is host to a new event that could draw excited visitors. The exhibition includes more than 100 items from Egypt, including 6 golden mummies. The most prized object on display is a 20-year-old female mummy with a gold mask and 2 jewels for eyes. Organizers have also put up for show original works by great European artists such as Raphael and Pablo Picasso.
Chinese astronauts on board the space station have held a unique conference with students, sending them a message that sky is the limit. They hope to inspire students to pursue their dreams and be proactive about their goals. Let's have a listen.
Every one of us went through rigorous selection and arduous training before carrying out space missions. Many people have to wait for several years, dozens of years, and even a whole life. But what deserves praise is that we have never given up, but remain true to our original aspiration, stood the loneliness, and passed the tests.
Ye, who is a first-time space traveler, also encouraged students to be brave in following their dreams. The Chinese astronauts talked about their life, work, and personal experiences. Students from Beijing, Hong Kong, and Macau were given the rare chance to ask their own questions during the Ground Space Conference. China launched Shenzhou 13 into space in October last year. The astronauts are scheduled to stay in orbit for 6 months, which will be the country's longest ever crewed mission.
A zoo in the Netherlands is celebrating the birth of a newborn manatee, a rare event among the endangered species, especially within the confines of captivity. The newcomer was born in a Royal Burger Zoo in the Dutch city of Arnhem. Zookeepers say the birth went smoothly, adding that this is the mother's second calf. The newborn is still too young for keepers to be able to determine its gender, but handlers hope it will be a female. That's because there are only 15 females in European zoos. Manatees are closely related to elephants and are sometimes called sea cows because of their herbivorous diet. These gentle giants are listed as vulnerable to extinction mainly because of loss of habitat and collisions with boats.
The mobile public library is back in the Afghan capital, Kabul, to bring joy to children with exciting books and games. The library reaches hundreds of children on a daily basis, seeking to expand its coverage in the coming days. Rahmatullah Baghban has more.
As the sun rises in Kabul, the Charmagh's mobile library starts a fresh mission to delight children. The library goes from zone to zone in the capital, Kabul, to spread the joy and love of reading among the Afghan children. It operates in 5 buses and has a children-friendly space. The organizers say they are happy being back for Afghan children.
Definitely, we want to enhance reading among children and boost their creative thinking. We have 5 mobile libraries operating across Kabul. Our services were shut for 3 months due to government change, but now they're happy that once again they can reach Kabul children. The library was sponsored by Afghan traders, but now it's out of funds and needs economic support.
I love my job here as a librarian. It's free for all. Children from different backgrounds come here to read books and play games. What I love most is watching children smiling and having fun with each other. I'm proud I can serve them with the skill I have.
Children are highly excited as they find the library right in front of their houses. Hundreds of children make daily use of initiative as most schools in Kabul lack library.
The mobile library used to come to our alley every week, but over the past 3 months, it didn't come and we missed it so much. We are very happy that it is bringing us joy again. Nowadays that our schools are closed, we can make use of its books.
We thank Charmax for its services. We have learned to read stories, play games, and draw pictures. We have kind teachers and have a good time with our friends.
This creative reading campaign starts as the country faced many challenges, affecting children's schooling and taking reading opportunities from them. As schools remain closed for most Afghan children, such services can be a good haven for students and book lovers. The initiative can also encourage children and bring the reading to life. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
People in the northeastern Chinese province are trying to keep alive a winter tradition going back centuries.
Each year, local fishermen and women in Jilin use an ancient technique to catch fish from Chagan Lake that is sealed with a thick layer of ice. What these locals do is they drill holes through the ice and put their nets under the holes to catch fish. But to pull out those nets from the lake, they will need help from a bunch of horses.
It was my first time seeing such a scene. Five horses drawing a turntable to gradually pull the net up to the ice surface. I felt very novel to witness this.
The technique has been listed as a cultural heritage in China. The ceremony attracts a large number of local tourists during the fishing season, which lasts until the end of February. Albino animals are rare and very vulnerable, so when you find one, you need to make sure they get all the care they need to survive. And now, Colombian vets are doing all they can to help the very first case of an albino baby, Jaguarundi, that's been rescued there. Fire department volunteers rescued this female cub in the urban areas of the Aboro Valley region. The vets are now giving it primary medical attention. The baby Jaguarundi will then be transferred to a conservation park in the city of Medellin for more protection. A local expert explains why they cannot put back the animal into the wild.
At this point, this animal cannot be released to the wild due to its albino condition. It is predisposed to certain health disorders, certain disadvantages when performing in the wild. Therefore, the only alternative for it is to end his life in a park such as this.
Albino animals face many difficulties in the wild and struggle with basic survival skills. They do not have good eyesight, and due to their lack of pigmentation, they cannot camouflage. Therefore, just like endangered species, human monitoring would increase their chances of survival.
Swimming in sub-zero temperatures can be unimaginable for most people, but not for a group of athletes who've tested their skills and strength in Prague's Vltava River. 360 people from 8 countries gathered in the Czech capital to participate in an annual winter swimming event. The air temperature was minus 6 degrees Celsius, with water temperatures dipping to as low as 3 degrees. The event honors Alfred Nikodem, the Czech swimmer who braved the frigid waters in Prague for the first time in 1923, starting a tradition that has been kept alive ever since.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Now the world's most powerful observatory is finally on its million-kilometer journey after several technical delays. The NASA telescope named James Webb blasted off into orbit on Saturday, heading to an outpost that's 1.5 million kilometers away from Earth. The observatory was in the making for some 3 decades and cost about $10 billion. It left Earth enclosed in a rocket and from a launch pad in South America. The journey will last a month. The telescope is the size of a tennis court. And if everything goes according to plan, it will enter service in June. Astronomers are hoping they can learn more about the origins of the universe once it starts beaming back new clues. The school in Spain is offering students an opportunity to join a special orchestra. The project dubbed The Music of Recycling brings unwanted junk back to life by transforming them into musical instruments. And here is how they sound. The project offers the instruments to the orchestra in one of Madrid's most disadvantaged neighborhoods. The students say the orchestra keeps them away from mischief and out of serious trouble while giving them an artistic outlet. Several dozens of children are taking music classes from members of the orchestra as part of the project. The ensemble has put on several concerts across Spain, but because of the pandemic, they had to pause their performances. The project is run by Spanish environmental group and is inspired by similar orchestra in Paraguay. To most people, an eggshell is something that gets tossed in the garbage, but to one Chinese artist, the delicate eggshell is the chosen canvas to express art and create mini masterpieces. Zhu is a talented craftsman who has created a series of unique egg sculptures with the theme of Beijing's Winter Olympic and Paralympic Games. Icons of ice and snow sports, as well as etchings of the 2022 Olympic mascots, are showcased in this series. The thin and delicate texture of the shells adds to the difficulty of the craft, which creates a sense of fragile beauty. Zhu says his fascination with eggshell art started when he was very young.
The Christmas season is when people around the world left out a dose of joy in the form of Santas. But it's different in central Thailand on this Christmas Eve. Thai children were ecstatic to see Santa Claus's distributing presents, but this time in the shape of elephants. Dressed in Santa costumes, five elephants carried dolls, face masks, and sanitizers for students. They were surrounded by many human Santa Clauses as well. But the students cheered with joy while reaching out for presents from the jumbos. Event managers say their goal was to encourage students to stay vigilant during the pandemic, plus they wanted to give the children some fun to look forward after months of virtual classes. The event is a yearly highlight for a school that caters to students from kindergarten to secondary level.
Scientists have made a stunning discovery inside a fossilized dinosaur egg. An embryo that's been preserved in a perfect shape. The embryo was found inside a 66-million-year-old fossil in a museum in the Chinese city of Guangzhou. Paleontologists say it's the best dinosaur embryo ever found. They're hoping it would help a lot in finding the links between modern birds and dinosaurs. The fossil belongs to a toothless Oviraptorosaur, a group of feathered dinosaurs that used to live in what's now Asia and North America. The embryo is nicknamed Baby Yin Liang after the Chinese museum that houses the fossil.
Exchanging gifts is an inseparable and also the most joyful part of Christmas traditions. How about sharing the joy with animals? Now, a zoo in the Colombian city of Cali is doing so by giving presents to its animals. The presents are actually the animals' favorite foods served in a different way. Animals spend time unpacking the gifts decorated in Christmas theme and then access the food they like the most. Feeding in this way arouses the animals' curiosity and fills them with excitement. Zookeepers say they want to show that animals always receive care at their zoo.
It is a very cool way to generate empathy for visitors. Although animals do not know that it's Christmas or that it's a special date, it is important to generate that message in visitors that we make care of our animals and that for us it is important to share with them this Christmas season.
The zookeepers say they make use of enrichment strategies for their initiative. They actually stimulate the behaviors of a range of animals, even the species they keep in an aquarium.
Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio.